Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to a Monday, May 23rd, 2022 edition here on the Chase the Most podcast. Apologies for the delay in getting this up this morning. Kind of a busy night last night and a busy morning. So apologize for this pod coming out a bit later than I would have liked. Usually these go out 3 a.m. East Coast time. So apologize on this one coming out a little bit later. But the rest of the pods this week should be back to usual in terms of when they go live on this very feed. On today's show, we got Nick Stellini, newly of Sportsline. So great to have Nick on the podcast to talk about Major League Baseball. The Yankees have figured it out. The Orioles calling up Adley Rutschman. The Mets losing Max Scherzer for a little over a month. What does that mean for them? Some really bad WRC plus numbers in the early part of the 2022 Major League Baseball season. The Mariners optioning Jared Kelenic. What's gone wrong for him in Seattle thus far? If the Nationals, would they actually trade Juan Soto this summer? And then a couple other fun Major League Baseball news and notes. But yeah, jam-packed show for you guys today with Nick Stellini. So appreciate Nick for coming on this edition of the podcast. Don't forget, folks, you can check out the podcast on YouTube. Oh yeah, we're on YouTube, youtube.com, type in the Chase the Most podcast. You'll find us there. All your full episodes, clips, video content, everything that you need over there at youtube.com. Type in the Chase the Most podcast and get everything you need. Tweet at me at @Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. You can email this very program at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to my sports writing. Oh yeah, I'm writing every day over there at the Substack, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type your email, never miss an issue, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. I think that's everything. If you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, make sure you leave this show a 5-star rating and review if you have not already done so. And yeah, all right, well, that will do it for this intro. Apologies again on the delay, guys, but hope you guys enjoy this with Nick, and more content coming to you guys this week. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, Sunday afternoon baseball talk here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am now joined by Nick Stellini. Nude gig Nick Stellini, is that what we're calling him these days? But I'm very excited. You hinted at what was next a couple weeks ago on the pod, but tell the good folks what's next with you, man.
Did you say nude gig? I thought I heard you say nude gig, because that's
no, not a not nude gig.
That's not what it is. It's a nude gig. I have a new job. I'm an editor at Sportsline, which is a fantasy sports and sports betting wing of CBS Sports. I'm extremely excited to be there. I've been on the job for 2 weeks now. Still learning some stuff, but I'm very happy to be there.
You also, I saw a crazy tweet and a couple pictures from you that just sent me, man. Like, what is up with the betting situation that you got sent your way with the black duct tape? What in the world was that?
So the other exciting thing happening in my life right now is that this will be the last show you likely see me from this location. I am moving into the city. I'm moving into Manhattan. And I'm moving in with a longtime friend of mine at his place. His roommate just moved out, so I'm taking the spot. So I'm moving in there, and part of that involves, you know, getting new furniture shipped into the apartment. And getting things shipped into Manhattan, I'm discovering very quickly, is an interesting proposition. And so I ordered a bed from a certain company, and part of it was just going through FedEx, so that was already a problem because FedEx is just not good lately. And then it showed up like 4 or 5 days late, and it showed up in, like, box would be a generous description. It showed up in, like, I think there was some sort of internal box, like it was an actual box, and the outside was just like wrapped in like this like loose piece of cardboard that had like 4 or 5 different old shipping labels on it. Like, at first I saw, like, I showed up in the lobby of the building and I went down to get it, and the initial shipping label I saw was from like some woman in California. So I was like, what? And I eventually found my name on it. If you can, it's on my Twitter timeline. You can go find it if you want to. But it looked like just like it had been like held together with like a bunch of black duct tape and lots of packaging tape and stuff. So it's like, okay, let's bring it upstairs. And I wasn't optimistic, to say the least. And then I start opening it, and I was going through all the pieces and everything to make sure everything was actually there. And I checked everything off. Everything was there. So I started assembling the bed. And the way it was structured was, like, there was a lot of, like, black metal framing with, like, some dark wood paneling for the headboard and the footboard. The headboard was all scratched up. There was, like, a chunk missing out of one of the edges. And I was like, all right, I'm trying to move in like, a week. Let's just grin and bear it, maybe. And so I start assembling it, and then I start putting the bolts in to attach the headboard to the frame, and I'm like screwing in one of the bolts, and I'm not even like, it hasn't even gotten tight yet, and I hear like grinding and like stuff, and it's like almost poking through the front of the headboard. And that was the point where I said, okay, I'm done. So that was when I decided to say screw it, and I called the company and I got my money back. And so I'm now in the process of trying to get another bed. I'm probably going to do it from a different company. Just in terms of, like, you know, expediency's sake. So I'm probably going to use my money that I got back from them on different things. That's what's going on with the move right now. Fun times.
Go check out Stellini Tweets if you want to see some just wild photos of some package. I don't even know what I would do if something like that was delivered. I wouldn't have gone to the extent that you did. I would have probably gone full Karen immediately and just been like, no, this is not happening. This is going back. Not only am I keeping this, but you're sending me another one like yesterday. Like, this is, we're redoing this whole process.
I was like trying to, like, you know, I was huffing pure copium at that point. I was like, let me just, like, let's see if it's like maybe, like, you know, the box got dinged up in transit and everything inside is still fine. Let me open it up and see if I can like assemble it.
Man, that looked like if I was a gift wrapper, and I am not. I am a bagger. I put the little bags. Yeah,
I am awful at wrapping presents. Which was unfortunate because for a couple summers I worked at Barnes & Noble, and we had a gift wrap station at the back of the store where you could get things wrapped for free. And I was always dreading, like, because the way they send people back was, like, either if you weren't on the registers, you had to, like, you stay at the registers to do stuff. But if you were working the floor, there'd be an announcement of the PA over the front, top of the store. So, you know, gift wrap, somebody go to gift wrap, whatever. And I was always praying that somebody else would go do it. Because, like, just, like, sitting there, like, wrapping presents with, like, you know, like, someone watching me wrap this present for someone they care about was the most grueling experience, because, like, I was just not good at it. And there were times people were just, like, cocking their eyebrows and be like, I'm sorry. It was bad.
It really is. And it's one of those skills that I don't have the patience for it. And then my fiance is an unbelievable gift wrapper, where the Christmas this year was wild, because I told her, I was like, you're gonna have to wrap for both of us, because we cannot have the disparity between what I'm putting together for your family and my family and friends versus, like, it just will look like I gave zero craps about what I was doing. And it that's not the case. It's just that I am incapable. I have a special set of skills, and that is not one of them. That's not one of my deals.
Fine motor skills have really been my thing. Gift wrapping included. I've also, like...
Are you a good folder?
I can fold clothes fairly well. Okay. But just like gift wrapping and stuff like that, not my thing. I've also started making deals with people I date where they said, okay, we're going to enter an agreement where we just don't buy gift cards. Because I think that's one of the biggest scams running is gift cards. Like if you want to send somebody like a thank you card, that's one thing, that's fine. Yeah. But like just like birthday cards and stuff like that, they cost an arm and a leg, and it's just like, okay, unless you're one of those weird people who like hoards all of their birthday cards or like whatever, because I know some people who do that, and I think that's odd. But like it costs like, what, $5-6 at this point, and like you're just going, yeah, okay, thank you, and then it gets thrown in the recycling bin.
Do you know what I think it is? For a lot of people, they keep them. The reason they hoard them is to flip them to somebody else later. So you don't have to go buy a gift. You just use the gift card someone else got you, and you give it to somebody else. Depending on when it expires.
I don't mean like gift cards, like store credit cards. I mean like birthday cards or stuff like that. Like, oh, like in the Hallmark section, like at the
I got whatever. You. Okay.
Yeah, like birthday cards. Sorry,
birthday cards. Cards, got you.
Yeah, birthday cards. I don't get that. Like I think they're a total waste of money. I think they're cheesy. Unless you're the kind of person who gives people like dirty birthday cards, like really like bad joke birthday cards. Like grown up birthday cards are fine, but the average birthday card you give somebody is, I think it's just a waste of money and paper. And so like I found that most people I try to like enter into that kind of contract with, like, oh yes, absolutely, please, let's do this, because I think it's stupid too. I found that's something that like most people feel deep down inside but never vocalize. Because we've entered into some sort of social contract with each other, like we have to spend $6 on a birthday card for each other, which I just think is ridiculous.
Okay, I like it. I
understand I'm currently doing an episode of Seinfeld on your show, and I apologize.
I didn't want to say that with the New York aspect and just go full stereotype here, but that was some Seinfeld, Larry Davian stuff right there. But I dig it. I dig it. Nick, because we're stuck in the the Northeast at the moment, I have to start off with the team that is near and dear to your heart. The New York Yankees, who early on we had a lot of questions. You and I talked about their offseason and the choices that they made and just kind of concerned. And one of the things that I wondered going into this year was, okay, one of Toronto, New York, Boston, and Tampa have to fall off. It just, there's no path for the four of them to be the kind of juggernauts that we could see them being. Someone's going to have the season from hell. And we wondered if it was going to be the Yankees, where it was like the decisions that they made going a little bit cheaper than they should have in a lot of areas, the questions at shortstop, rotation, stuff like that. And no, it hasn't been them. It's been to the delight of Yankee fans everywhere. It's been the Boston Red Sox, who no one's hitting in Boston across the board. Outside of Trevor Story having that 3-home run game, he's been brutal this year. And JD Martinez, that's about it. But they're having the season from hell. Alternatively, the Yankees are just, they're playing great baseball. Nick, what has flipped for the Yankees at this point in the season?
So it's been a lot of things. I like you said, and as listeners of the show, no, I was pretty down on the Yankees coming in to the season, and they've proven me wrong so far, and I'm quite happy to have been proven wrong. They've been pretty darn good, and obviously the pitching, I think, has been the backbone of the team. The pitching has just been outstanding. 1 through 5, they've been great. Severino's come back from Tommy John surgery very well. Jordan Montgomery's pitched well. Jameson Taillon's been pretty decent. And, you know, they've got their $325 million man, Garrett Cole, who is having a perfectly fine season. And then there's the ace of the staff, Nestor Cortez. Nestor Cortez, who, you know, recently unearthed bad tweets when he was a teenager aside, has been a delight to watch this year. I've said multiple times on the show that junk ballers are my favorite guys. I love watching junk ballers pitch. And Nestor Cortez is like the platonic ideal of a junk ball pitcher. The guy just throws... I say this with the most love possible. He throws garbage, and it makes me so happy. He's not a fastball pitcher. This is a velocity, you know, infused world. And Nestor Cortez is out there throwing changeups and sliders and all sorts of stuff. He does not throw particularly hard. Like, he's in the 90s, but he's not throwing like hard. he is like, when you look up crafty lefty in the dictionary, you see a picture of Nestor Cortez and his mustache. The dude has a 1.80 ERA right now. Like, and he just like baffles lineups. It's so much fun. You know, you have to start thinking, I mean, yeah, it's May 22nd. You have to start saying, does Nestor Cortez have a real shot at the Cy Young Award? Like, it's that crazy right now. It has been so much fun. And then on top of that, their bullpen has been just disgusting. Clay Holmes might be the best reliever in baseball right now. And it seems like the Yankees have a guy with that claim every year. Last year was Jonathan Loaisiga, who's having a good year, not great year. Loaisiga has been a little up and down. But Clay Holmes might be the best reliever in baseball right now. If you look at the Baseball Savant leaderboards, you just go to like statistics and you go to pitching for the year 2022. He's at the top of leaderboard all red across. It is disgusting. That's just how it is right now, man. Like, it is so good. And then the team is hitting. Aaron Judge is, you know, every single day he goes out there and says the Yankees screw you for not paying me my money. And he's, you know, driving up his price. Him and Giancarlo Stanton have been playing great. DJ LeMahieu is now hitting again after the injury he was playing through last year. He's back and healthy and playing very well. We talked about the shortstop situation. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you know, he still has an OPS under 700, I think. But that being said, he's hitting for average, which, you know, if you're not going to hit for power, at least hit for average. And he's playing a pretty decent shortstop. So that'll do. It's been pretty good. Rizzo's hitting well as well. So I think the Yankees actually can only improve. I think that there's definitely underperformers still on the roster who you would hope will be a little bit better. I just got some bad news today that Chad Green's getting Tommy John surgery. But they have the bullpen depth to absorb that. Michael King has been amazing. So they have the depth to absorb that. You know, you want to get more out of Joey Gallo. You want to get literally anything out of the catcher position, which they still really have not done on days when Kyle Higashioka is starting, which is most days. Jose Trevino has actually been a pretty good backup catcher. There are a lot of people who think he should be the starter. I would not complain about that. You know, he's not hitting the cover off the ball. He's, you know, you look at the numbers, it's not great. But
who has a good catcher anymore? I mean, the Astros are raking, and they have just a non-starter at catcher. Right. It just seems like, to be good, you actually don't need a catcher. Right. You need to be bad. Right.
Exactly. So you see Wilson Contreras in a Yankees uniform after the trade deadline. I would not be surprised by that. I think that'd be a very shrewd move. That or they address center field, because Aaron Hicks has been not really good at all. And a everyday presence out there, especially since Joey Gallo has been very up and down, too. Like the baseline Joey Gallo is never really, really pretty to look at on a day-in, day-out basis, but the stats overall look decent. It just has not been great, so they could probably use a spare outfielder at some point, too. But overall, this is a very, 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 very good team. They should contend for the pennant, if not the World Series. I've been pleasantly surprised.
Well, you missed out on Justin Upton. He just got picked up off waivers by the Mariners.
Oh, did he?
So that fourth outfielder. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not an option for you guys anymore. But yeah, we'll see what happens with the Yankees. I am like you, pleasantly surprised by what they've done to start off this season. The Orioles, on the flip side, haven't been atrocious. They're not in Cincinnati Reds territory. They're they're bad, but they're not awful.
I am starting to become a Baltimore Orioles enthusiast in like the most like morbid fashion possible. Bruce Zimmerman is good at baseball. Let's talk about Bruce Zimmerman. This dude's been great, and I've been cautioned by an Orioles fan to don't buy into this. You don't fall for it. But so far, Bruce Zimmerman has been pitching his butt off, and I'm very happy about that. That's been fun. Like, there was a game he pitched against the Yankees and looked really good. You know, like, they've got, you know, Jorge Mateo is like started playing baseball, which is really cool. Trey Mancini is back and been doing Trey Mancini things. This is a team. It's not a good team, but it's not like embarrassing as much as it used to be. It's still embarrassing, to be clear, because this could have been an 85 win team this year if they had invested in them at all. But like, Anthony Santander is hitting really well. He's got a 131 WRC plus. I am into some of these guys. I think they've got the makings of a good team here. Will that good team ever actually come to fruition? Probably not, but you know, there's been a little bit of something here to watch at least.
Yeah, and one of those somethings is Adley Rutschman is now a major leaguer. This is cool. This is one of those really cool moments.
About damn time.
About damn time, but he's here. And my question to you, what do you think the Orioles are getting? What excites you most if you're an Orioles fan about Adley getting called up this season?
I think what you're excited about is that, you know, there is, I don't know, a glimmer of hope. Like, this guy should have been up a year ago, if not earlier. And the fact that he's only coming up now, like, in a way, is like kind of a little bit of a slap in the face. But he's finally here. Let's actually play some damn baseball now.
I wonder if he's up a year ago if the CBA and everything did not change. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I think, because it seems like so many people opened up this year that I wonder if he would have been up last year, if the events from this winter happened last year.
Maybe not, but like, yeah. I don't know, like he's been ready for so long, isn't he? He's been ready. He probably needed some time in the minors after he got drafted. Mm-hmm. Like, you probably could have stuck him in the majors like immediately after he got drafted and he would have like embarrassed himself. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how good he was in college. Like, his numbers from AAA last year were just silly. He hit 312, 405, 490 last year, AAA. A little slow. His numbers in the minors this year, like, you can't really look at them a whole lot because he was, like, recovering from an injury. But he's still, like, the couple games he played in A-ball and AA, was he coming back up from the injury on his rehab, were, like, just silly. And then he got into, how many games? 12 games at AAA before he came up. And, like, he didn't hit for a whole lot of average, but he just hit the tar out of the ball. Mm-hmm. So what you're getting in Adley Rutschman is a contender for, if not immediately, probably not immediately, but within the next year or two, the best catcher in baseball.
Is that on both sides, like as a defender and a hitter? Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't think he's going to be like, you know, Mike Zunino on defense. But the balance of his quality enough defense and his good bat, that together enough is going to make him like enough to like challenge for the title of best catcher in baseball. Like, he is stupidly good.
What's the biggest difference between him and Matt Wieters?
Adley Rutschman's name does not yet provoke fight or flight instincts in Orioles fans. He's got that going for him, which is nice. He's also a switch hitter, which is cool. Yeah. Was Wieters a switch hitter?
Goodness, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Somebody in the comments will prove us wrong and yell at us. I think Rutschman is about as complete a baseball player as you could become right now. He's not going to steal bases because he's a catcher. Mm-hmm. We can't all be Jason Kendall, but...
What's his favorite skill set of you? Like, what is your favorite skill set of his?
Of Rutschman's? I literally have not watched a whole ton of tape on Rutschman. I like that he's a, you know, impact hitter from the catcher position. That is a rare thing in baseball. It affords you options somewhere else. Because you have offense position you don't normally get offense from, which means you can spill things up elsewhere. I think he should be a decent enough defender that you can, you know, you're not going to like cringe when he's back there. And you know, this is an organizational cornerstone. This is the guy you build your team around if all goes well. Comps can be such a cruel thing because like, you put a comp on a guy and like, everybody hears that name is like, oh my god, if he's not this guy, he's a bust. Blah, blah, blah. But like, you could be looking at your own Buster Posey here, is what I'm saying. And Buster Posey is a slam dunk Hall of Famer. So that's the talent that Rutschman has. Whether or not that talent actually, you know, sticks and becomes a long-standing thing is another thing entirely. Because as we know, prospects will break your heart. Prospects are just, you know, just that. Prospects are not actually. You know, guaranteed things. They're lottery tickets in a way. Because he can come up and all of a sudden see major league shape curveballs and sliders and be like, oh, what the hell is that? And then you're in trouble. So if all goes well, he's an organizational cornerstone.
Yeah, it's the Christian Pache thing. I remember Braves fans and just the the Andrew Jones comps and just the expectations there because the defense was there. And it was like, okay, if he figures out the hitting because it's all raw, but man, Andrew 2.0. And I was like, I mean, probably not. Like, probably not. Andrew is a borderline Hall of Famer, but I'm a big believer in that when you strike gold in the prospect market early on in your rebuild, that's when I'm like, all right, let's get out of this business, because it's already hard enough to get two cornerstones and develop them and then become what you thought that they could be. And you're like, okay, well, we got Acuna, we developed Acuna, we developed Austin Riley. All right, let's get out of this business, because the odds of us continuing to hit home runs on these prospects and Drew Waters becoming a great player and Langerhans and Contreras, and you just go up and down the list that, like, I don't know, man, like, that's when you get out of it. So I wonder with the Orioles, if Rutschman and who is the, what's the arm that they still have?
Grayson Rodriguez,
yeah.
And DL Hall.
So once those guys are up, then I wonder where they go. If they start, it is the Orioles, so we'll see if they become a little bit more
active.
Well,
so that really depends on what ownership decides they want to do. You know, because the whole point of, you know, like, so again, this my great example of this is always the Cubs. The Cubs did a phenomenal job of building and drafting and acquiring great minor league talent. But the Cubs would not have won the World Series if they didn't sign John Lester. The Cubs would not have won the World Series if they didn't go out and get Ben Zobrist.
Jake Arrieta.
Jake Arrieta was a reclamation project, a trade, but the point remains. Like, you have to, like, bring in established guys from outside. You can't just, like, say, oh, we have our prospects now. Let's go with 85 games and maybe we'll get to the World Series.
Right.
Like, you actually have to, like, you know, try, which is a very difficult thing for some teams to understand. That's where things are right now. So like I said, you know, between, you know, how well Austin Hayes has been playing, how well Anthony Santander has been playing, how well Bruce Zimmerman's been pitching, Jorge Lopez has looked really good in the closer's role. With all of that being said, and, you know, still Ryan Mountcastle and some other guys, and, you know, like, nobody's hitting this year because it's just nobody in the league is hitting, but, you know, theoretically have, like, a smackalum of talent here. You add in Adley Rutschman, you add in Grayson Rodriguez, who will be up at some point this year, God willing. If they screw him around, then I'm going to be really mad. D.L. Hall should be up at some point this year. You got those guys together. You bring in, you know, a couple of, you know, 4 to 5 wins with a WAR from outside the market. Then you got something here. This could have been, like, a middle-of-the-pack team, which, you know, no, it's not necessarily a playoff team, but, you know, at some point you have to take even a single step forward. Because when you take a single step forward and you show that you're willing to at least try, then other players in the league would say, hey, look, they're at least trying. Maybe let's go to Baltimore and help them win the World Series and be legends. You know what I mean?
That's, like, why I hope they don't trade Mancini and they don't trade Means and they keep some of these guys, because like, you got a good thing going, and just keep investing. Keep the guys that are good. Keep the good vets. You don't actually just have to give vets away because you're rebuilding. You can actually keep them and keep moving forward with them.
I would hate for their reaction to Rutschman and Rodriguez and Hall coming up and actually playing well. I would hate for their reaction to that. Be like, okay, let's trade Cedric Mullins this winter.
Yeah.
Like, that would suck. That would really suck. Like, Rutschman and Cedric Mullins should be, like, the core of the next good Baltimore Orioles team. I have my doubts, unfortunately.
We'll see. A lot of baseball to be played before then. The Mets, who have jumped off to a great, great start in the NL East, much to my chagrin, they lose Max Scherzer, who took himself out of his last start, and he will now be on the DL for at least 6 weeks, it looks like. What does losing Scherzer mean for the New York Mets in the short term, Nick?
So, in the short term, it's bad because you don't have Max Scherzer on your team. But beyond that, now you have to start giving starts to likes of Trevor Williams and David Peterson and those guys, which is probably not the worst, probably not the best thing in the world. You want to try to ideally avoid giving those guys tons of starts. So I would expect them to add an arm at some point in the near future. They probably need to do that anyway, but now it's becoming a bit more of a, you know, dire thing, especially with obliques things, because, like, obliques can be really tricky sometimes, and, like, Max is not as young as he once was. He's 37 years old now, I think. And I love Max Scherzer. I want him on the field always because he's just so much fun. But you need to plan for, you know, this being like a multi-month thing, unfortunately. So, yeah, they need pitching in a bad way. I mean, looking through their pitching depth right now. It's David Peterson. It's Adonis Medina. It's not great. They need help. I think they just picked up Trevor Cahill on like a minor league deal, I think.
That man is going to be playing baseball until don't even know. My 40th birthday. Who knows? This man just keeps getting those checks. Shout out to Trevor Cahill.
So maybe you see Trevor Cahill take a couple starts in Queens, a couple turns to the rotation before he's unceremoniously shipped off again. But that's where they're at right now. They need guys with a pulse who can go out there for five innings.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how that goes. It's not a fun place to be in. They also have like Jordan Yamamoto still down there. Those guys. Maybe you finally see Thomas Sopucki. But you know it's not great. Especially with Tyler McGill being hurt because he was Jacob DeGrom's replacement, and McGill was actually throwing pretty well, and then he got hurt. You don't have
Taiwan Walker. Here you go. Here's your moment.
Well, I mean, Walker's back and healthy, so
yeah.
So, I mean, the good thing is that, you know, the guys who are still around, like Carrasco and Bassett, they've been playing pretty well. Bassett's been phenomenal.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's not like they have nobody good in the rotation right now. They still have some decent arms out there. They just need to fill innings. They need guys who can eat innings, if nothing else, and then hopefully you get Scherzer back at some point.
Can I get on my old man soapbox real quick,
Nick? Oh, God, okay.
So, the Mets and the Braves have played a couple times this year, and the Mets have a very good hitter who was a longtime Oakland ace. I think you know where I'm going with this. It's Mark Canna. His windup and his approach at the plate sends me into overdrive. If I was a Mets fan, I would be losing my mind at what this man does in the batter's box over and over and over again. The fact that he's good means he gets more at-bats. He's at the top of the order. He's a great player. But Nick, his windup and what it takes for him to get ready in the box is a travesty. And I need it to go away. I need Major League Baseball to step in and say, Mark, enough is enough. I can't do this anymore. Am I overreacting, or is it way too over the top?
I've watched a bunch of Mets games this year. And Mark Canna's, you know, routine in the box has never even impacted me enough in a way to like even know what the hell you're talking about.
Okay, I need you the next Mets game. I want you to get a timer, kind of like Giannis and his free throw. His free throws.
Okay.
It's that kind of thing where I think people need to do this in opposing stadiums when Mark gets in the box. I need everyone in the stadium to just chant 1, 2, and just keep going and see how long it takes for Canna to get ready pitch after pitch. I'm telling you, man, he's got the longest break in between pitches of any hitter I've seen in a long time. It's just wild to me. It's a wild thing, Nick.
Well, I will run your complaint at the ladder to the appropriate authorities.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We'll get right on that.
So I was going through over the weekend Fangraphs WRC Plus, the best hitters and worst hitters through about 2 months into the season. And Nick, like we've talked about in this podcast, the ball being different and hitting just being down across the board, there were going to be some ugly numbers. But man, there are some surprises here, and Jonathan Scope's not one of them, but Marcus Semien, Whit Merrifield, like there, Alex Verdugo, Adam Duvall, who I've watched a lot of this year, Javi Baez, which is a big part of the reason that the Tigers have not had the season that they were hoping to have. What names on this list, when you're going through the WRC Plus, where you're like 30s, 40s, and folks, remember, 100 is league average, and these are some high-priced dudes who are having just the seasons from hell. What jumped out to you going through this list?
So I'll give you a couple. Framil Reyes was very surprising to me, because that guy is normally a monster. I'm also surprised at Enrique Hernandez, which I wonder if that is a bit of the ball, I haven't looked at his, like, you know, pitch type breakdowns, if he's like suddenly stopped hitting sliders or whatever. But I want, just without looking at those splits, I wonder if that is the ball dying on him. Tyler O'Neill is very surprising to me. He was great last year. He's decidedly not great right now. But Trent Grisham, man. Trent Grisham.
Mm-hmm.
At 146, is that? At 146, he is hitting. Oh, my goodness. Like, so Grisham was never, like, a super high average hitter to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like, 251, 242 last couple of years. But 146, that is unsightly. He is supposed to be the spark plug for the Padres offense. Like, his whole deal was that he was going to be bat laid off, hit a home run every now and then, but mostly just get on base. And then everybody would behind him would hit him in. He has a 146 batting average, a 255 OBP. That is ugly. He is roughly 50 points below league average on offense right now. Like, I was watching the Padres the other day. I was like, you saw he's batting ninth. I'm like, why is Trent Grisham batting ninth? That's weird. And then I looked up his numbers. Like, oh, that's why he's batting ninth. Yeah, that's not good. That is not good.
I wonder, man. Like, it's funny where you look at this list and you're like, okay, that's why the Tigers are bad. That's why the Royals are not having the great year that they're looking for. That's why the Red Sox are having the season from hell. A lot of Boston guys on this list, which is not great. But is this it for Nelson Cruz? Is this it?
Oh, man, I hope not. That'd be upsetting.
Is it just the stink of being in Washington? I mean, Carter Kieboom just went down with Tommy John. Let's just get him out of there. Get him out of the rebuilding situation. Yeah, let's hope this isn't it.
I am very much in the free Nelson Cruz movement. His walk rate's actually up this year. He's striking out less. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if part of this is just, you know, the ball. Part of this is being stuck in a crappy team with nobody to protect him.
Yeah.
And maybe he is 41 years old, man. I don't know.
Yeah,
if I was an enterprising general manager in need of a tiny boost for my offense, yeah, I'd be willing to take a flyer on Nelson Cruz, see if he, you know, putting him in a good park with a good lineup around it would help him a little bit. But this might just be it, which is really upsetting. Because in my head, there was part of that wanted Nelson Cruz to play until he was 50. Five times undefeated.
Yeah, great pod, Effectively Wild. Meg and Ben Lindbergh were talking about this when I was fishing over the weekend. I was listening, and they were talking about this Boston situation and then Nelson Cruz, and they didn't really have an answer either because they were talking about the Diversity Plus and it being a Fangraphs podcast and all that kind of stuff, and listened to hear their perspectives on it. But I don't know, one name I don't think they talked about that I wanted to ask you, it's just, so the Rockies had this great start, and obviously that was not to be. That was not long term. But they get Chris Bryant back, it looks like, which should help. But CJ Krohn, who should have been a Rocky for the last 20 years. I don't know what he was thinking, because that man was always going to rake in Colorado. And I don't understand why he's not just signing one-year deal after one-year deal in Colorado. That's what I would do if I was CJ Krohn. Mm-hmm. And I think he would hit until he's 54, because that is the park for him. So shout out to CJ Krohn for raking in Coors. But who's not raking in Coors was Brendan Rodgers, who,
yeah,
highly rated prospect, been in the game for a while now. And I wonder, do you think it's not going to happen? Do we have a Dansby Swanson scenario with Brendan Rodgers?
That's a good question. So last year, over the course of 102 games, he was exactly league average on offense, which, you know, it's so funny. Last year's 100 WRC plus versus this year's WRC plus 100. Like, last year, he hit 284, 328, 470. Mm-hmm. Good slash line, bit low in the OBP, which is why he was only average. But, like, he hit 284, he slugged 470. Like, that's pretty cool. Now it's different. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over to the splits tab. And we're going to diagnose Mr. Rodgers here. Let's see. So last year against fastballs, he hit 377. This year, 261. Last year with sliders, 286. This year, 160. Ooh. Last year on changeups, 149. This year, 214. Curves, 278. Curves this year, 333. So it's the slider. It looks like he's not hitting the slider anymore. So that's interesting. Again, this is small sample size. It's you know, end of May. But he's stopped hitting sliders. Let's see. He is striking out slightly more. Walk rate is actually up a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. BABIP has gone down, which is to be expected with this sort of thing. That's interesting. So without looking at tape or anything, or looking at if he's changed his swing or something like that, because full disclosure, I've not watched a lot of the Rockies. Even if I had, I would not know enough to say, oh, look, Brendan Rodgers changed his swing. So I would not be able to eye test that. It looks like he stopped hitting sliders, which is interesting. And I also think he stopped hitting for power, obviously, because last year he slugged 470. This year it's 345. So I would hazard a guess it is a combination of the dead ball and the fact that he suddenly stopped hitting sliders. How do you fix that? I'm not a professional hitting coach, so I can't tell you. But that's not great. No. I will say that there's always been in among certain prospect evaluators, at least outside of the independent evaluators that I know. There's always been some trepidation about his ability to actually hit at the major league level. So maybe that's happening.
We'll see. I hope it turns around for him. And the Rockies do need him to turn around there. But we'll see. We'll see. Someone else who needs to turn around their young career. It's up there in the Northwest, unfortunately. The Seattle Mariners, who are having just another rough year for Seattle, unfortunately, where I think they're now behind the Rangers in the standings as of the Sunday afternoon. But Jared Klinik, your old friend up there in the Northeast from the Mets organization, which feels like forever ago, what do you make of him getting optioned to AAA today? Is this he has not hit obviously well at all, but what does this mean for the Mariners and Klinik?
I think it's probably the right thing to do just for his sake. He is clearly not doing well in the majors. He's hitting 140 in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to do it. I don't begrudge the Mariners for putting him on the opening day roster. I mean, he didn't clear the Mendoza line last year when he was up, but you know, he was still getting major league at bats, which is good for his development. And so I don't begrudge them putting him on the major league roster to start the season. But obviously, when that doesn't work out, you got to send him down. Because clearly he has stuff to work on, and it's easier to work on those things when you're getting everyday at-bats rather than just, you know, coming off the bench every once in a while, because you, like, get at-bats and work on adjustments and stuff. This sort of thing happens. It's important to remember that I believe Jared Kelnick is actually younger than Juan Soto, I think. But the point is, he's still very young. He's 22 years old. Juan Soto is older than him, but there's some big prospect who was struggling who just got sent down. Somebody's saying, he is younger than Juan Soto. What am I talking about? He's younger than Juan Soto. He's younger than Juan Soto. He's 22 years old. This is not the end of the line. He still has plenty of time to make adjustments and work on things and get better. He's fabulously young. Getting sent down in your age 22 season is not the end of the world. Is some of the shine off of them? Yeah, of course. But that's always what's going to happen in these situations. That's not to say that Jared Kelnick's major league career is kaput. He's never going to hit. Whatever. There's still plenty of time. That being said, Seattle clearly needs to do something to get, you know, a fire under their asses and start playing better baseball. Development is not linear. It doesn't always look pretty. I'm not out on Jared Kelnick. I don't think he's, you know, my future expectations might be slightly decreased, but that doesn't mean it's going to be bad either. This is just how it works sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see what happens. If you had to guess who figures it out, who has a better chance of figuring out, Joe Adell or Kelnick? Who do you think?
So I proposed to somebody, the other day.
A trade between them?
a chaotic evil Kelnick for Adell trade. I think I probably still take Kelnick. Because there were serious concerns about Adele's bat at times in the minor leagues, like, and like not nearly to the degree that there ever was about Kelnick's bat. So I probably take Kelnick right now, but like there's still a chance both these guys are good players like this time next year.
Do you think it requires them getting out of their organization where they're just going to need a fresh start?
So that's always so hard to say. Like there are definitely some times where like you see a guy like, okay, like this guy clearly needs to change the scenery. I'm not well versed enough in either of these guys to like definitely say like, you know, like they need to change the scenery. I will say that, you know, being in the same organization as Mike Trout is, you know, can be a little rough sometimes if you're an outfielder, especially with Brandon Marsh coming up and playing fairly well too. So that might be a bit disheartening for Adele, but I don't know. Sometimes trades do good things for these guys. We'll see. I mean, if I'm a general manager and one of them calls me up and says, hey, do you want Adele or Kalanick? Like, at first, you'd be like, okay, why are you willing to get this guy up? What aren't you telling me? But that's why you have your own internal evaluators and stuff to cross-reference that sort of thing. Right now, probably give me Kelnick, but I'm not at all confident in that.
Why are the Astros the only ones who can develop outfielders? Because you have Pache out there in Oakland. You got, it's just a lot of talent, a lot of young talent in the AL West in the outfield, but they're just, they're not hitting yet. They're not there. And then
Kyle Tucker didn't come up and immediately, like, light the world on fire. Like, people got to remember that. Tucker was, he was, like, when he came in 2018, he was not good. 28 games of just not being good. 2019, he was decent. And he really didn't really become Kyle Tucker until last year. He was hitting well, but he wasn't, like, playing. Let's say 2020, because he had pretty good stretch in 2020. But he was okay in 2019. And then 2020 is when he really came onto his own. But, like, that took two seasons. So these things are not, again, these things are not necessarily linear. They're not always immediately cool. It's you know, you are not forever marked by your first taste of the major leagues. Like, I don't know. Mike Trout's first taste of the major leagues, I think he hit like barely 200 or just above 200, in 2011. And then he came up in 2012 and he was Mike Trout. So, you know, these things take time sometimes.
Yeah, let's hope, because it's better when these young guys blossom, and baseball's better when they all blossom. So we'll see what happens there. Speaking of Juan Soto, you mentioned him a little bit ago. I'm curious, because the Nationals obviously haven't, like, I think we just expected coming into the year that they would have a fire sale this summer, and that's why you sign a Nelson Cruz, that's why you do what you're, that's kind of like why they're in the situation that they're in. And I mean, there's no path. I'm not going to condemn what the Nationals have done and the current state of affairs in DC, because they want a ring and they spent a lot of money. And what makes me cautious, I think you and I have talked about this, where the Lerner family is one of baseball's better ownership groups. And if they sell and they're going through this rebuild, that's a huge bummer. And I'm concerned about who steps in to fill that void in DC, because I just think, based on the current state of affairs amongst billionaires, getting back-to-back positive ownership groups in a major league city is a scary proposition. But, I mean, that's still TBD in D.C. But Juan Soto, who did not agree to a new contract, they did. What happened there, it's so interesting, because you never know what a player wants or what a player's thinking or where a player sees his value or what his plans are. It's just them and his agent and his inner circle, and you never know how those kind of things are going to go. If they take a friendlier deal because, hey, it's still a lot of money, I can re-enter free agency in my prime at 30-31, sign for a bunch of money now. And that's kind of what Acuna did, where Acuna will be a free agent in his early 30s and will be able to cash in for the Mike Trout type deal if he keeps doing what he's doing. So, yes, it was a humongous bargain in Atlanta, and I don't like that Albies and Acuna both took very, very team-friendly deals to help this ownership group. But Acuna's still in a good position to cash in later, and it's still a lot of money for him. But it's curious, because once it was clear that Soto was not going to sign what was a pretty lucrative contract offer from DC, you were like, oh, is this something we have to monitor where it's like, if you're Juan Soto, do you want to stick around for this rebuild? Do you want to stick around for this uncertainty in the ownership group? Do you want to stick around where it's like, there might be a fire sale, man. You might be the last man standing in a like with a team that's just not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. Like the farm system's in shambles. Like it's just going to be a painful rebuild in the nation's capital. Do you think there's a possibility that the Nationals entertain Juan Soto offers this summer?
I'm sure they'll get calls.
Yes.
My thing with trading Juan Soto is like the same conversation we used to have about trading Mike Trout.
Yeah.
Right when the Angels stopped winning, they got to trade Trout. My response to that was always, the actors trading for Mike Trout turns you into the Angels, where you have nothing except for Mike Trout, and you're back to square one. That's exactly what trading for Juan Soto would do to a team, because there is no package out there that you can put together for Juan Soto that does not completely hamstring your team for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He is that good, that young, that cheap. The cost is almost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think a fair, equitable deal for Juan Soto is, double it. That's probably where it would be. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, does Mike Rizzo want to be the guy who says I traded Juan Soto? Mm-hmm. Juan Soto is 23 years old. Like you could still draft well, trade well, and all of a sudden you're like a decent team again in 3 or 4 years when Juan Soto will be 26 or 27. Mm-hmm. And you still have prime Juan Soto to bolster whatever other stuff you just added to your team. Do you really want to be the guy who traded Juan Soto? I wouldn't want to be that guy. And do I want to be the guy who traded literally my entire farm system plus two or three guys at the Major League roster for Juan Soto? I don't want to do that because my team sucks with Juan Soto. You have to be willing to say, like, you have to be a team that, like, the Dodgers, who are like, you are ready to win the World Series right this second, and you have all the prospect capital in the world on your farm system. You can just ship it all out, win the World Series this year, and be done. Like, that is what you have to be willing to do.
Padres, maybe.
The Padres farm system is not that good anymore. They spent that's most true. Of their guys. They spent most of their guys. It would have to be, like, exactly the Dodgers, I think. And the Dodgers could keep winning for the next decade, or they could trade for Juan Soto.
Mm-hmm.
And then pay.
But then you have to pay him. I don't know. Like the Dodgers, they don't do stuff like that. Really, that's just not how Friedman's ever really operated.
Right, but I'm saying that those people with the capability to do it. Because, they'd have to pay him, and then have to pay Trey Turner. Now you've got the 2019 Nationals, basically, where you have Soto and Turner and a bunch of old guys. So,
are we sure the Tigers shouldn't just say, this rebuild's not going well? Like, whatever you want. We're done with this.
So, the Tigers could have done it 3 months ago. They can't do it now.
Sure.
Because Spencer Torkelson has been very bad.
Yeah.
If we didn't know, if Spencer Torkelson did not have any major league stats, you could probably do it. Even with Riley Green being hurt. But you'd have to do, three more things on top of those guys. And then, again, you're severely hamstringing your future. In the name of the
but what future too. Right now if you're Detroit? You're like, it's been a decade. It's not gone well. Are we sure this rebuild's going to work?
But I'm much more confident in that with, some pitching and Riley Green and some other guys than I am with, just Juan Soto, and then I have to spend to go get the other guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's tough. It's really tough. I just think the cost is so prohibitive. I think the fear of being the guy who traded away Juan Soto and watched him win 3 rings somewhere else, while you maybe win 89 games 4 years in a row and do nothing else. It's not worth it, man. It's not worth it.
That's fair. Couple quick things as we wrap up here on the Sunday afternoon edition of the podcast. Nick, who's been your favorite team to watch of late? I'm just curious. Who you enjoyed watching?
I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I watch a lot of the Mets. Just because, the best word I can describe for it is it's comfy. They're on at a reasonable hour for me on the East Coast. They're on my cable package, so I get to watch them. So I can just log into the SNY app on my tablet and fire that up while I'm doing work. Obviously, I watch a lot of the Yankees too. But outside of that, like, just I watch a lot of Mets games, and it's very comfy. I know the players well. I know the team well. The broadcast is just such a joy to listen to. I think the SNY booth is by far the best broadcast in the league. I watch a lot of the Mets. They're fun. And I like the broadcasters.
I can't join you as an Atlanta guy. That's just not that's not going to happen with the I don't know if you saw 2021, right?
Yeah,
2021. People forget. We'll end on this, Nick. Was there a stat that you came across on Twitter.com or in a piece that you read that you saw in the past week that you really love in Major League Baseball?
Yes, so it's the entire percentile rankings box on Nestor Cortez's Baseball Savant page.
Okay.
It's a lot of red and then a 4 in the basketball velocity category, which just brings
you love
me
Nestor, Nestor Cortez.
He's so much fun. He's so much fun, man. You know, like 95th percentile XERA, 90th percentile X slugging, 67th percentile walk rate, 90th percentile strikeout rate, 71st percentile fastball spin, 4th percentile fastball velocity. It's a beautiful thing. Get on the bandwagon. It's happening.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Nick, what can the good folks check out from you this week across Sportsline and anywhere else?
So I'm not really writing a whole lot right now. I'm editing. But obviously, if you are a gambling person or a fantasy sports person, a DFS person, Sportsline's got a lot of great stuff. We've got this really cool internal system that simulates every game 10,000 times, and then we run it against the Caesars odds and tell you whether or not the odds are good or not. We've got a lot of cool experts picking stuff, whether it's, you know, soccer, baseball, the ponies, golf, all that stuff. So if you are a person who is into shelling out cash on bets that will never ever cash because you hate yourself, or you're really good at it, check out sportsline.com. Obviously, you shouldn't hate yourself. Gamble responsibly. Yeah, that's what we do. We've got a really cool system. I think it's a really neat thing. Our experts have a really great record, too. So rather than just, you know, going into your app and saying, that number seems nice, run it against what we're saying. We'll probably help you out more than that.
Check out Sportsline. Do that. Well, congrats again, sir. I'm happy for you. Hope this is a good thing for you, man. And and go watch Tennessee baseball. Like, for the folks, we're in Hoover this week, number one overall seed in the SEC tournament. The best team doesn't ever win in the College World Series, unfortunately. So they have not won since like 99. Miami won as the number one overall seed, but yeah, I feel a little weird. I cannot pivot all my attention to Braves country and Major League Baseball until Tennessee wraps up, because we're too good, man. The Dingers, we're just Dinger Central here in East Tennessee, Nick. Like, it's just college baseball is very different to watch than Major League Baseball. If you want to,
it's
a very weird thing to transition to a Braves game from a Tennessee baseball game. It's very strange, but different in good ways. Nick Scalini, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you again soon. All right, that's a wrap on this edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Monday, May 23rd, 2022 edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to Nick for coming on today's show. Make sure you go follow Nick and keep up with his work over on his Twitter page and Sportsline and everywhere else. Make sure you go check out our YouTube page, youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas Podcast. You'll find us there, all kinds of great stuff. So go ahead and subscribe. That'd be great. Email this program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at me at @chase_thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. Visit the HQ, chasethomaspodcast.com. Let's see. Read my written work. Yeah. You can go check all that out at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Type your email and never miss any of my written content. Wrote a new piece over the weekend that you guys should check out if you feel so inclined. New episodes coming out this week every day. So yeah, big week ahead. I appreciate it per usual, guys, and I will talk to you all very soon. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.